This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. This week, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, declared the first 6 months of 2017 the second warmest on record. Care to guess what's in first place? 2016. This year, climate scientists expected things to cool down, but that hasn't happened. Here to tell us more about it, as well as other short subjects in science, is Sophie Bushwick, Senior Editor for Popular Science. Good to see you again, Sophie.
Thanks for having me.
So what happened? This year is warmer? Cooler? What happened?
This year is actually cooler than 2016, but we were actually expecting that. So in 2016, we had El Nino, which is a weather phenomenon which tends to give us warmer temperatures. So you'd expect an El Nino year to be warmer. But 2017, we don't have El Nino, and yet we still have these really high temperatures, high enough to be in second place in terms of hottest temperature year on record. And that's a big problem because that suggests that global warming is really pushing up the temperatures. You can think of sort of El Nino compared to global warming as a ride on an escalator almost. So global warming is the escalator taking you up. And El Nino is kind of like if you hopped up in place a couple times, you'd get a little higher and then come back down. But global warming is the thing that's gradually taking you up.
So have these warmer temperatures have been affecting weather patterns around?
Yeah, they have. So Canada this year has been reporting more flooding than would be normal for them. Normally, their weather kind of a rainstorm comes in and then it goes back out again. Yeah. But weather has lingered there more, which is causing flooding. And another issue we're having is more frequent droughts in Montana and the Dakotas in the States. And then another thing that we're seeing is a lot of severe wildfires. So right now we've got wildfires in British Columbia in Canada, in California in the States, and in Southern Europe. And so this is the type of nasty weather phenomenon that you can expect to see more frequently in a warmer planet.
The new normal.
Yeah.
Let's move on a little bit. Not a great week for environmental news, it seems. A study has estimated the amount of plastic that we humans have created over the last 50 years or so, and it's a lot, isn't it?
It's 9.1 billion tons. Wow. That's billion with a B. Basically, if you took all that plastic and if you're comparing it in weight, it's like if you took 25,000 Empire State Buildings made out of plastic.
25,000?
Yeah, that's the weight.
So if you lie those down in New York, could we cover Manhattan? I don't know how many.
Oh, absolutely.
How deeply you'd be walking or whatever, living in it.
Right. And that's the amount of plastic we've produced entirely. It's not necessarily the amount that's in the world right now. But the problem is that of all this plastic we're pumping out, we only recycle 9% of it.
Wow.
Yeah, so
It's been increasing almost geometrically then over the last few years.
Right. They're estimating we'll be at 13 billion tons in 2050. It just is going to keep going up.
And we see it washing up on those islands in the Pacific. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's sort of clumping together into these garbage masses in the ocean, and you see it on land getting into nature as well.
So recycling is really not working for plastic.
Well, I think the problem with recycling is we're not recycling enough, and that even as we recycle, we keep using more of it. So one thing that you can do is to stop getting as much plastic in the first place. Like if you're shopping in the grocery store, bring a reusable bag so you don't have to use up plastic bags, and maybe choose items that aren't wrapped in plastic. I love getting takeout, but as much as it hurts to say it, that stuff is really heavily packaged.
Those dishes they put them in now instead of little boxes?
Right, the little plastic clamshells.
I use them for my saucers, for my plants, at least I'm reusing.
Right, that's good. So yeah, if you are getting those, at least you can get more than one use out of them instead of just getting more and more.
Yeah, I have to get more plants. next, we have not one but two studies measuring how fast a T-Rex may have been able to run. This was big news all over the web this week, wasn't it?
Yes. I think that we're all very excited to decide whether a T-Rex would be able to catch us if it was chasing us.
Oh, of all the things we need. Well,
in a
nice
Jurassic
diversion.
Park world, you know, you want to know these things. So there's two studies use totally different methodologies, though. So one looked at, like, the mechanics of how a T-Rex would have run, and they said, basically, a T-Rex would have done more like a brisk walk, that if it tried to run, it would put too much stress on its body. But according to this study, a brisk walk for a T-Rex would be more than 12 miles per hour. And so that's not nearly as fast as a sprinter like Usain Bolt, who can run at nearly 30 miles an hour at his fastest. But compare it to a marathon runner, a winning marathon runner would be going faster than that. But like I think your average marathoner, a good marathoner would be doing, you know, about 12 about 12 miles an hour, so being just barely even with the T-Rex, which isn't good.
Another study, so there were two studies on how fast they were going, right?
So the other study was basically looking at a lot of animals and saying, how does an animal's size relate to how fast it can go? And so when they were looking at like a curve, because you would expect the bigger animals have bigger muscles that can run faster, but the fastest land animal is a cheetah, which isn't that large. So the idea is that once you get past a certain size threshold, all that extra size starts being too much weight to run as quickly.
Are there other dinosaurs that did run really fast?
We think velociraptors could have gone at about 34 miles an hour.
34? It's like a horse.
They could eat Usain Bolt really easily. Just like, you know, velociraptors are sort of, you can picture them as terrifying chickens, like sort of terrifying oversized chickens. And yeah, they could definitely run down even the fastest human. I think that's a scarier prospect than the T-Rex.
Yeah, that's what happened in the movies.
Yeah, the movies were right. Who knew?
Although we're not sure about the feathers and things that they had on.
The feathers are still up in the air, so to speak. But I think that I kind of like picturing them with feathers because if you've ever been attacked by a goose, those things are mean.
They sure are. Finally, we can't let you go without mentioning Elon Musk. His tweet this week, he said he has permission from the government to build the Hyperloop, sort of a verbal permission.
Right. So I'm glad that Elon Musk is excited about his Hyperloop, but he's going to need a lot more than verbal permission. He's going to need a lot more than permission from just one government. So he's proposing a Hyperloop that would connect New York, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and Philadelphia, and that would be able to deliver passengers from, I think, New York to D.C. in 29 minutes, which sounds great in theory. But in order to dig the tunnel for that, he doesn't just need permission from the federal government. He needs permission from the state governments. He needs to get approval from the locals whose property he's going to be tunneling under. People need to do environmental impact studies. And then they've got a above ground structures. Like, how are you going to get out of the Hyperloop without some above ground structure and an elevator? And
look, you know, we can't even get a bridge to Jersey built. So, good luck with that one.
Yeah, I feel like he's being maybe a whole lot too optimistic.
Thank you, Sophie. Always good to talk to you.
You too.
Sophie Bushwick, a senior editor at Popular Science.